It's 1900 UTC, and that means it's time for That's News to Me. I'm your host, DJ Marcus. Let's see what's happening in the world today. Hello, hello, welcome. It's 1903 UTC, and I'm Marcus. It's News to Me time. So, first up, I want to be sure you know, you can always go whenever it's a live show, which is Monday through Thursday, and sometimes live on Friday, usually recording, or hopefully it'll become usually recording. Anyway, you can always join in on comm. All you gotta do is type SSH over to SDF, and then use the command comm, C-O-M, and then G for go to, and an on radio is the room. Just go ahead and do that. And then boom, you're in the room, you're hanging out with Ratsu and Publius and X1 and just everybody. X1, let's see, I'm trying to see who else was here. But hello, hello, and welcome. And Exile looks like he's in here, and Jazzmaz, Dusted's in here. I haven't seen them talk while we're here, but anyway. And Tobe, of course, every day at 1930 UTC, not early, not late, but always at 1930. So, let's get started the way we always do.
World news.
That's right.
World news.
Turn up the blender and get going. So, first up, Paris is in the headlines, or this is a story out of Paris. A Paris court on Wednesday found the French state guilty of failing to meet its commitments to curb greenhouse gas emissions in a landmark ruling hailed by activists as historic victory for climate. A group of NGOs, backed by 2 million citizens, had filed a complaint accusing the French state of failing to act to halt climate change in what has been dubbed the case of the century. In its ruling on Wednesday, the Paris Administrative Court recognized ecological damage linked to climate change and held the French state responsible for failing to fully meet its goals in reducing greenhouse gases. The court ordered the state to pay the symbolic sum of €1 in compensation for moral prejudice, a common practice in France. The French case is part of a mounting push for climate campaigners across the world to use courts against governments. An international accord signed in Paris 5 years ago aims to limit global warming to less than 2 degrees Celsius over pre-industrial levels and preferably to 1.5. But experts say governments are far from meeting their commitments, and anger is growing among the younger generation over inaction, symbolized by the campaigns of Swedish teenager Greta Thunberg. French President Emmanuel Macron has been very vocal about his support for climate change action. He pushed in December for beefing up European Union's 2030 targets to reduce greenhouse gases by at least 55% compared to 1990 levels, up from the previous 40% target. So, it's very interesting indeed. We'll see how this plays out, just because we're all in this together, and since we're a global thing, it kind of, you know, one country can be like, you know what, we really need to be able to warm ourselves with just, you know, raw burning waste or something. Just destroy the planet, so. But, it's important to note, cheese comes from cows. So, that's news out of comm. If you have cheese-related questions or concerns, head on. Now, if we go over to Myanmar, we talked about they've had a coup recently, so there's a lot of political upheaval. They have filed charges against Aung San Suu Kyi after the coup. The police have filed charges against the ousted leader for illegally importing communications equipment, and she will be detained until February 15th for investigations, according to a police document. The move followed a coup on Monday and the detention of Nobel Peace Prize laureate Suu Kyi and other civilian politicians. The takeover cut short Myanmar's long transition to democracy and drew condemnation from the U.S. and other Western countries. A police request to a court detailing the accusations against Suu Kyi, 75, said 6 walkie-talkie radios had been found in a search of her home in the capital. The radios were imported illegally and used without permission. A document reviewed on Wednesday required Suu Kyi's detention in order to question witnesses, request evidence, and seek legal counsel after questioning the defendant. A separate document showed police filed charges against ousted President Win Myint for violating protocols to stop the spread of coronavirus during campaigning for an election last November. So, let's see. And it appears, coming in hot off the press from Publius, she's also the daughter of General Aung San. So, there we go. The chair of the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, Parliamentarians for Human Rights, Charles Santiago, said the new charges were ludicrous. This is an absurd move by the junta to try to legitimize their illegal power grab, he said in a statement. So, very... poor Myanmar. They're going to have some trouble for a while. And, not going too far, the BBC's reporting, women in China's re-education camp for Uyghurs have been systematically... Oh, this is an abuse story, by the way, so warning if you don't... If that bothers you, turn away. Women in the camp for Uyghurs have been systematically raped, abused, and tortured, according to detailed new accounts obtained by the BBC. You may find some of the details in this story distressing. The men always wore masks, Tersune Ziawudun said, even though there was no pandemic then. They wore suits, not police uniforms. Sometimes after midnight, they came to the cells to select women they wanted and took them down to the corridor to a black room where there were no surveillance cameras. Several nights, Ziawudun said, they took her. Perhaps this is the most unforgettable scar in me forever, she said. I don't ever want the words to spill from my mouth. Ziawudun spent 9 months inside China's vast and secretive systems of internment camps in the Xinjiang region, according to independent estimates. More than 1 million men and women had been detained in the sprawling network of camps, which China says exists for the re-education of the Uyghurs and other minorities. Human rights groups say Chinese government has gradually stripped away the religious and other freedoms of the Uyghurs, culminating in an oppressive system of mass surveillance, detention, and indoctrination, and even forced sterilization. It's almost as bad as what we do in the U.S. The policy flows from China's President Xi Jinping, who visited Xinjiang in 2014 in the wake of a terror attack by Uyghur separatists. Shortly after, according to documents leaked to the New York Times, he directed local officials to respond with absolutely no mercy. The U.S. government said last month that China's actions since amounted to a genocide. China says reports of mass detention and forced sterilizations are lies and absurd allegations. Calm is a fun place. It's definitely interesting. Now, if we could only export it into the rest of the world, that'd be great. Anyway, sorry, I got sidetracked for eating calm. Anyway, first-hand accounts from inside the internment camps are rare, but several former detainees and a guard have told the BBC they experienced or saw evidence of an organized system of mass rape, sexual abuse, and torture. Ziawudun, who fled Xinjiang after her release and is now in the U.S., said women were removed from cells every night and raped by one or more masked Chinese men. She said she was tortured and later gang-raped on three occasions, each time by two or three men. Ziawudun has spoken to the media before, but only from Kazakhstan, where she lived in constant fear of being sent back to China. She said she... There's a lot of she's in here. She said, she believed that if she revealed the extent of the sexual abuse she had experienced and seen and was returned to Xinjiang, she would be punished more harshly than before, and she was ashamed, she said. So, anyway, that was a hard paragraph to read. I was sure it was much worse to live through, but I'm just like, there were just lots of she's. The story goes on and covers a bunch of the history going on and the re-education camps that are being built, but it's an in-depth look, and it's definitely worth checking out. If you're curious or want to learn more about what's going on over there in China, there's plenty of Western news about it. Good luck finding anything about the American concentration camps, though. That's even harder to find. Alright, so let's go back. Reuters still in China, but a more positive story, I guess. The Ant Group has reached a deal with Chinese regulators on restructuring. Ant Group company has agreed a restructuring plan with Chinese regulators, under which the fintech giant will become a financial holding company. A person with direct knowledge of the matter said, potentially easing founder Jack Ma's regulatory woes. The plan calls for putting all of Ant's businesses into the holding company, including its payment, processing, and technology offering in areas like blockchain and food delivery. Bloomberg News first reported Ant had reached an agreement with Chinese regulators about the proposed restructuring. An announcement about the restructuring, which will result in the company being subject to capital requirements similar to those of banks, could come before the start of China's Lunar New Year holiday on February 11th. An agreement on the restructuring of Ant, an affiliate of e-commerce giant Alibaba Group, would ease investor concerns about regulatory crackdown on billionaire Ma's business empire. So, this is a good news for Ant Group. We'll see how it works out. It's also warned that Ant's business prospects and IPO plans are subject to substantial uncertainties. So, currently we are unable to make a complete and fair assessment of the impact these changes and uncertainties will have on Alibaba Group, it said. So, this is, that's how that's going. So, yeah, maybe Ma will survive. pull it out. Now, this is an uplifting, or at least a story with a positive ending, and this comes to us from The Guardian. Academic jailed in Iran pulls off daring escape back to Britain. A British-Iranian dual national sentenced to 9 years and 3 months in jail in Iran for cooperating with a hostile state power has smuggled himself out of Iran, escaping over the country's treacherous mountainous border, and is now living in London. In an interview with The Guardian, Camille Ahmadi explained he felt had no option but to flee after spending nearly 100 days in Evin prison, including a brutal spell in solitary confinement while he was being interrogated. Once I'd been sentenced, I had a choice of whether I would stay and not see my family and 4-year-old child until he was 14, or to risk fleeing, he said. Ahmadi, a social anthropologist whose research revealed the extent of female genital mutilation in Iran, was found guilty of conspiring with hostile foreign powers in November 2020, among other charges, but he was released on bail pending his appeal. He was also fined more than £500,000. He said given how Iranian courts normally confirm the first judgment, and because of the political motivation for the trial, he had not held much hope his appeal would succeed, a view that was confirmed when it was rejected in absentia on Monday. Ahmadi said he did not yet know whether Iranian officials realized he'd escaped the country. He escaped carrying only his laptop and copies of the books and articles he had published, crossing the border through snow 1.5 meters deep, and fog, evading Iranian border patrols. Border security has been heightened ever since the assassination of Iranian nuclear scientist Mohsen Fakhrizadeh in Tehran last year. I'm Kurdish by ethnicity and I know some of the roots, but it was very dangerous, he said. I had to try several times. Ahmadi followed the paths used by mountain porters, evading U.S.-imposed sanctions to carry alcohol, car parts, medicine, cigarettes, and contraband from Iraq and Turkey. But the routes are hazardous. One smuggler carrying 4 tires on his back was recently shot by border guards, while several others have frozen to death. So, very, very wild times. It's pretty gnarly. And international story. This is more of like a look back at the history. I saw this on Al Jazeera, and I thought it was kind of interesting. It's news to me anyway. And we've got the children colonial Belgium stole from African mothers. So, and here we go. Monique Bitu Bingi, 71, has never forgotten how it happened. It was 1953. So this isn't like ancient times. This is someone who's alive talking about it. It was 1953 when the white colonials came for her in Babati, a village in the Kasai region of what is today the Democratic Republic of the Congo, then a Belgian colony. She was 4, the child of a black Congolese woman and a white Belgian colonial agent. Because she was mixed race, she would be forced to leave her family and live at a Catholic mission. If she stayed, there would be repercussions. The men, farmers, hunters, and protectors of the village would be forcibly recruited into military duty and taken away. When the time came to leave, her mother was not there to say goodbye. She had left, unable to watch her daughter go. Oh, man. I do. I wonder that, too. How much Afghanistan opium from Afghanistan goes through Iran? I don't know. The border story was kind of interesting. I didn't realize that it was just kind of like, well, they'll shoot you if they see you, but there's not a lot of them, so they might not see you. So, anyway. Sorry. Calm. I get sidetracked. My bad. Anyway, Monique remembers traveling with her uncle, aunt, and grandmother, who carried her. She could tell something was wrong from her grandmother's sadness. They walked west for about 2 days, crossed a river, and slept in cabins used for drying cotton. When they reached Dimbalinge, interesting name, Dimbalinge, they hitched a ride northwest on a truck carrying the body of a woman who died in childbirth. It was headed for Katinde, in today's Kasai Central Province, where the St. Vincent de Paul sisters' mission was. Monique fell asleep. It must have been a Wednesday, because weddings happened on Wednesdays, and when she woke outside the mission, she saw a young Congolese couple, the bride dressed in white, and strangers everywhere. But her own family was gone. She remembers walking through the crowd crying until an older girl from the mission brought her inside to the others. Among the countless abuses committed by the Belgian state during its colonial occupation of the Congo from 1908 to 1960, taking over from the exploitative and violent rule of King Leopold II, which killed millions of Congolese, and its control from 1922 to 1962 under a League of Nations mandate in Rwanda-Urundi, today Rwanda and Burundi, is the little-known systematic abduction of biracial children from their maternal families. This abduction policy has brought lifelong pain and consequences for the Métis, as they are known in French, who have tried to piece together stolen identities and histories. It's a catastrophe, says Evariste Nicolakis, 74, who is Métis. When this kind of love is taken away from children, they're going to carry that scar for the rest of their life. It's something that cannot be healed like other scars. The story is much longer, and it has lots of photos and documentation kind of showing the history of this, and it's just, it's really cool if you're into that. So, yeah, so it's just, anyway, it's kind of interesting history. It's wild because when you think colonialism, you don't think 1960s, so that's post-World War II. We had atomic energy. Why do we still have colonies? Anyway, it's time for a song. It's 1920. And that means we gotta play a song. We gotta get something. Get it out of our system. Do. I wanna hear...
Get the news over with. I wanna hear the music.
I know, right? I will know. It's like... You know what? We're gonna play this song. This is called Backslider from the Toadies.
Bended knee, 9 years old, waiting for just one word. Yeah.
listening to Anon Radio, powered by SDF Public Access Unix System.
Oh, yeah. Welcome back. Welcome back. That was the Toadies with Backslider. And it's time to look at some tech news, kind of get rid of our... We got a couple stories to finish out. Nothing too crazy. Do-do-do-do. All right, here we go. Amazon intensifies severe effort to discourage first ever U.S. warehouse union. Big surprise there. A push to unionize workers in an Amazon warehouse in Alabama is running into tough opposition as the retail giant, whose profits have boomed during the coronavirus pandemic, despite concerns over worker safety, has launched an aggressive anti-union drive. If workers at the BHM1, that's Bravo Hotel Mike 1, warehouse in Bessemer, near Birmingham, succeed in their efforts, they would form the first union at Amazon warehouse in the U.S. The warehouse opened in March 2020, during the beginning of the pandemic. By the end of 2020, the retail, wholesale, and department store union said over 2,000 workers at the warehouse signed union authorization cards ahead of the election workers filed for in November 2020. Ballots for the election are scheduled to be mailed out to about 5,800 Amazon workers on February 8th, with vote counting scheduled for 30th of March 2021. Lawyers for Amazon are currently trying to appeal against the decision to allow the election to be carried out by mail and have requested the election be delayed until their appeal is reviewed. Ahead of the union election, Amazon has strongly encouraged workers to vote against the union through text, messaging, anti-union websites, and several anti-union captive audience meetings with workers at the warehouse. In the texts, Amazon claims workers will be giving up your right to speak for yourself by signing a union authorization card and emphasizing union dues, claiming unions are a business, telling workers don't let the union take your money for nothing, and prompting them to visit their anti-union website. Amazon has also sponsored ads on Facebook featuring their anti-union website and telling workers to vote no when it comes to this union busting. It's severe. We've never seen anything like it on this level, said Joshua Brewer, an organizer with the Retail, Wholesale, and Department Store Union. There, fun union confederacy joke there in the comm. Pretty good. So, when it comes to this, all right, this is something that's always been and will continue to always be the people of Bessemer, the workers at Amazon coming together. This was theirs and will always be theirs. Amazon's sales and profits have boomed during the pandemic, and its outgoing CEO and founder Jeff Bezos added more than $70 billion to his net worth during the coronavirus pandemic in 2020 alone, which is now nearly $185 billion. But the company has also faced criticism for safety concerns. So if we go down a little bit here, because the story is a little long-winded, the lines... They started giving associates final warning for breaking social distancing, meaning that if associates were seen within 6 feet of each other, they were given that final pink slip. But that was so unfair to the associates because there weren't even enough seats in the lunchroom. Amazon did not respond to multiple requests for comment on Massey's termination or characterization of the work environment at BHM1. In regards to the union drive, an Amazon spokeswoman, Heather Knox, said in an email, "We respect our employees' right to join or not join a labor union, but we don't believe this group represents the majority of our employees' views. Our employees choose to work at Amazon because blah, blah, total BS." Yeah. So, anyway, yeah, Amazon is really mad and looks like they're running scared. So, give them hell, guys. You're going to really help the rest of the country if you pull it off. Just a couple quick extra little closing headlines. Stocks rally on strong earnings, oils and gas, oil gains. Global equities rose on Wednesday, lifted by strong results from Alphabet Inc. and upbeat earnings in Europe, while oil prices advanced more than 2% to their highest levels in nearly a year on a growth outlook bolstered by stimulus hopes. So, see that. Silver regained some ground as well. And GameStop is still way down. It's down at $100 now. It was at its peak at $483. And we got about 2 minutes, so let's finish this up. Morgan Wallen, a U.S. radio station's drop country star over racial slur. U.S. country music star Morgan Wallen's been removed from more than 400 U.S. radio stations' playlists after a video emerged of him using a racial slur. and the footage reportedly filmed by a neighbor last weekend, the 27-year-old is saying goodbye to some friends and calling one of them the N-word. The Nashville star, whose latest album has been number one in the U.S. for the past 3 weeks, has apologized. So, that's a little bit annoying, but fun. And AOC is in the news because she wants people to remember the January 6th overthrow or attempted coup. Here's what we get from The Nation. On Monday night, New York Democratic Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez spoke on a live video on her Instagram page about her fears during the January 6th riot in Congress. In gripping detail, Ocasio-Cortez described how she hid in the bathroom as she heard banging on the door to her office. I started to hear these yells of, "Where is she? Where is she?" And I just thought to myself, "They've got inside." Ocasio-Cortez recalled, "This is the moment I knew where I thought everything was over." She remembers thinking she was going to die. During the talk, Ocasio-Cortez compared the trauma of the day with her earlier experience of sexual assaults, which she had alluded to before, but never in so much detail. "I'm a survivor of sexual assault," Ocasio-Cortez said, "and I haven't told many people that in my life, but when we go through trauma, trauma compounds on each other." So then if we go on down here, Ocasio-Cortez's willingness to speak of her vulnerability during January 6th, when she spent hours barricaded in the office of Katie Porter, was a powerful reminder why the Capitol riot still demands redress. All right. Well, hey, Claudium. Welcome, welcome. Stay tuned for the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe. That's coming up at 1930 UTC, which is in less than 10 seconds. Oh, my goodness. How is this happening? Where'd the time go? Well, that's out.